Well, the summer season rolls on, a quiet period in sports television and sports media, but we're still doing a Sports Media Watch podcast this week. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So not a lot going on in the industry, but certainly over the weekend, yours truly was in Chicago for the NASCAR Cup Series race on the streets of Chicago. We'll talk a little bit about that today. A little bit about Fox soccer coverage and the great success that they've had as well. And maybe a little bit on Caitlin Clark and some of the other evergreen topics. And Caitlin Clark delivering big ratings is at this point an evergreen topic. But we'll start with NASCAR at Chicago since I was there. So this was the second edition of the NASCAR street race at Chicago. And the thought was, okay, well, last year everything got rained out and it just wasn't what it could have been. So this year, you know, you'll get better weather. And that's what it seemed to be. It was a really nice day to start with. Not a cloud in the sky at the start of the day, but by the time the race was underway, that was not the case. A lot of NASCAR fans complain about, you know, starting the races late. And they say, well, why can't we just start the races at 1 o'clock every week? And certainly this week, had that race been started at 1 o'clock, it would have finished, you know, as scheduled. But with the 5 o'clock Eastern time start, by that point, the rain was starting to come down. It came down much heavier than I think anybody expected. And it was a very long delay and kind of took out some of the energy. But I think when the race restarted, there were still a lot of people there. A lot of energy still. And I would say it was an entertaining and enjoyable afternoon, even with all the wet weather. So, you know, ratings were okay. Ratings were down, but they were not bad at all. The only issue is, you know, you would like to get one of these in start to finish without being shortened at some point. And the other issue is there's no way Chicago is going to let this keep going year after year after year. Drew, I'll bring you in.
Yeah, I think your article kind of got at the greater point here, and that's whether or not these kind of one-off events have any sort of sustainability when it comes to viewership. You mentioned the other NASCAR race in the LA Coliseum, or events like the MLB Field of Dreams game or the Rickwood Park game. You know, these are nice novelties in the moment, but at this point, I think you use the term diminishing returns. That's really what they are. And as you mentioned, those returns are better than no returns at all. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure how sustainable these types of things are long term. I do think, though, it is great that leagues are trying these new things, because you really never know when one of these, what we're calling novelties now, will actually catch on and become a bigger event than it is at the start. These events always have the possibility to grow into something bigger. It's not going to happen every time. And that's why I think it's great that these leagues are taking the risks and doing these new things. But yeah, we'll see how long the city of Chicago wants to close down much of the city for a NASCAR race. I can't imagine that will go on forever.
No, I would be surprised if this even went beyond next year, which I believe is the final year of the 3-year deal. It's a nice race. It's a nice event, but again, it's impractical. It's impractical for NASCAR too. 2 years in a row rain, and you can't postpone it to Monday. So, you know, had the rain not let up on Sunday, that race would have finished after 25 laps and given Ty Gibbs one of the cheaper wins in recent memory. So you don't want that. It's just impractical, but it's you know, it's enjoyable, but it's impractical. You know, certainly I do think it benefits both NASCAR and Chicago.
Let's talk about some of the numbers specifically for the Chicago race. This year's race averaged 3.79 million viewers on NBC. That was down 18% in viewership from last year's edition of the race. I think this clocked in as the sixth most watched NASCAR event of the year. Last year's Chicago race was the second most watched, just behind the Daytona 500. Of course, the rain did impact these numbers. Probably could have expected stronger viewership had the weather held out. But overall, a pretty successful event still, would you say, John?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I think if you can get 3.7 million viewers, 3.8 million for a race that had such a long rain delay, obviously the delay pushed the finish well into prime time, which does help. Obviously, there's not a lot of other stuff going on. But I think if you're NBC and NASCAR, you're very pleased. You know, and I think it's a great number for them. I would be interested to know what the ratings were in Chicago. But I think it was, I think it did quite well. Now, look, when all is said and done, you know, this is not some kind of, oh, wow, NASCAR, these numbers are unbelievable. I mean, they're, you know, I mean, last year, it was the second most watched race of the whole year. And that made, you know, that was something. This year, behind Talladega and, you know, some of those other more traditional races earlier in the year. Yeah, I mean, but I think given the circumstances, I think you should be pretty pleased if you're NASCAR.
Was there anything notable about, you know, the media presence there, John? You had boots on the ground. How was the media set up? Was there a lot of publications there covering the event?
Yeah, there were some familiar faces there. Ryan Glasspiegel of the New York Post, J.A. Adande was there as well. So some familiar faces. And of course, the usual NASCAR rock stars, Bob Pockrass, Jeff Gluck. But definitely some folks who don't cover NASCAR all the time. I did ask and basically was told that Chicago, Los Angeles, those are the races where you get many more people who don't normally cover NASCAR to attend races. So definitely, you know, a lot of folks checking it out. You know, I mean, realistically, was I ever going to go to a race at Talladega or Daytona? No, but, you know, Chicago, it's right there. I mean, would I go to Indianapolis? Because Indianapolis is, you know, right next to Chicago. And I don't know. I mean, to me, I wouldn't be interested in going to an oval, you know, and seeing a race on a normal track. I think the charm is in the fact that it's on the street, and that's what helps something like F1, for example. You know, F1, its popularity is a little bit overstated compared to NASCAR, given NASCAR gets more money, much more money, and of course has much bigger audiences as well. But you know, F1 is certainly the hip thing, and I definitely think that running on the streets of these cities and having the scenery that NASCAR does not usually have, that's a benefit of street racing.
Yeah, no doubt. As someone who would not consider themselves a NASCAR fan, there's definitely more intrigue when it comes to the street racing aspect of Chicago versus, like you said, an oval. All right, John, let's move on to our next topic. Fox Soccer, of course. There's been great viewership numbers coming out of both the Euros and the Copa America for Fox. Why don't we run through some of those figures now as we sit in the middle of the semifinal rounds of both tournaments?
Well, you know, 4.3 million for France, Portugal on Friday, tremendous number for a non-US soccer match in the middle of the afternoon on what was theoretically a work day. I mean, granted, the Friday after the 4th of July, I don't think a lot of people were at work, but a great number there. Obviously, Fox has, you know, Fox has created a pseudo World Cup, right? Combining these two events. Copa America, I don't think has ever gotten this kind of, you know, attention before. And to be able to say, we have, hey, the semifinal of Euro in the afternoon and then the semifinal of Copa at night. And granted, they're not on the same network. I think they probably should have put Copa on Fox as well for some of these matches down the stretch. But it's been great. They've done a great job with it. Look, a lot of people don't like Fox soccer coverage. To me, I look at the creation of interest where there was not as much, and I see something very successful in that. I think they have managed to make the Euros and Copa feel like complementary events in a way that they have not before. And I think the ratings show it. I think they've been feeding off of each other. I also think putting a lot of events on broadcast television is the way to go. ABC was not airing Euros in the middle of the afternoon on a weekday. So to me, Fox deserves a lot of credit. You don't have to like Alexi Lalas. You don't have to like any of the people that they've got, but they deserve credit for the strategy of what they have done in terms of putting this together. And I do think that you say, well, any network would have gotten these numbers. I don't think that's true. It's not every network that would have put these matches on their broadcast channel. If CBS had the rights, they'd have their great studio team that everybody loves exclusively on Paramount Plus, right? And if ESPN had the rights, all the matches would be on ESPN and ESPN2, except for a handful on ABC on weekends. So it's not every network. Fox not having a streamer is a big factor as well. So there's two things about Fox. They don't have a streamer, not really. You can count Tubi if you want, but I wouldn't count it. And beyond that, Fox as a broadcast network is not really on the level of ABC, CBS, and NBC, right? It's just not. And so it's easier for Fox to say, you know what, we'll just put a sporting event on in the middle of the afternoon during the day, during the workday. And that it's not easy for ABC to do that. Fox never had afternoon programming, right? ABC, NBC.
It's all syndication.
Exactly. They always had their As the World Turns or whatever, stuff that they were preempting. For Fox, they have more flexibility and less incentive to put these things behind a paywall.
Yeah, you bring up a bunch of good points. And, you know, of course, I wrote an article over the weekend kind of defending this strategy from Fox that has been very successful in viewership. You know, I was surprised at kind of how the reception to the article was. I did not expect this article to, resonate with as many people as it did. And of course, there was criticism and people on the other side that did not agree with much of what I had to say, but I thought that would be the majority. In reality, I think this article resonated with more people than actually did not agree with it. I think there's a level of gatekeeping within the soccer community in the United States. You know, speaking from personal experience, I've been a soccer fan, since I was a kid. I've followed the sport. But I've never truly attached to the club side of things. So when looking at the viewership between the U.S. national teams, both the men's and the women's, and club soccer viewership in the country, it kind of became apparent to me that I'm not the only one that is in this boat. I've probably watched 90% of U.S. men's national team games, including, friendlies against Oman and Serbia and Bosnia and Herzegovina, January camp friendlies that do not matter. I've probably watched 90% of those games since, 2010, like the last 15 years. And to say someone like that in that boat is not a soccer fan, to me, it rubs me the wrong way. And when you look at Fox's coverage, they're appealing to me specifically, right? A person that enjoys the sport, but really is only following, Americans abroad. And when the United States men's national team and the United States women's national team plays in these big international competitions, by doing so, I think they're appealing to a much broader and a more casual audience, yes, but they're never going to lose the soccer diehards, no matter how USMNT-centric their coverage is. So to me, it does not make any sense to appeal to that wing of soccer fans when they could bring in an entirely new audience based on, more US-centric coverage. That being said, some of the criticisms are valid, right? Like, these tournaments are going to get better viewership just because of the growth of the sport in the country. But like you said, a lot of that has to do with the broadcast exposure, the scheduling. Fox has done a lot to grow the sport for an American audience. And that has gone overlooked, I think, in a lot of the coverage of the network's soccer broadcasts.
Yeah. I mean, look, I will say I don't watch enough of this stuff to have an informed opinion in terms of the, you know, what Fox is doing. I mean, I don't really even have an opinion about Alexi Lalas. You know, I mean, to me, he looks like Bill Walton. So that's the most I can say about Alexi Lalas. I did see a comment. Someone was saying, well, this website had that article about the NBA and ESPN and ABC, and now it has this one. And I'm like, well, one, two different people wrote these articles. And two, you know, I mean, I guess my question would be, to someone who watches much more of this than I do, was Alexi Lalas ranting about how the United States needed to win and, you know, red, white, and blue skies? I mean, were they doing that? I mean, did it turn into a focus on the analysts' discussion of the U.S. national team?
Well, I think there's always a level of, you know, flag wrapping from Alexi Lalas, and I think that gets into just his personality and his beliefs off the soccer field. But I think that's also inherent in international competition beyond soccer, right? When we're watching the Olympics as Americans, generally we're rooting for the Americans to do well, right? When we're watching the U.S. basketball team, but, you know, we're rooting for them because we live in this country, right? So that is, of course, an aspect of Fox's soccer coverage. And I think that is an entryway for a lot of people into international soccer, right? There's a reason why the World Cup gets insane viewership compared to any other competition. It's because there's an aspect of community in rooting for your country. I don't think it's overbearing on the Fox broadcast. I'm not going to defend the studio show. I don't think it's anything special. And, you know, I do think a lot of the, you know, segments they do are very simplistic. But there's an element of emotion that comes out because you have former U.S. national team players on the panel. And there is a connection, direct connection with having played for that team prior and going through these same tournaments and these same World Cup cycles, qualifying, Copa Americas, Gold Cups, that they can relate to. And I just think playing for your national team is a very emotional thing. And that is what is displayed when Alexi Lalas or Clint Dempsey is talking about representing your country and playing for the United States. I don't think it crosses a line into, you know, jingoism.
Well, I mean, even if it did, I mean, I'm not a jingoist, honest to God, you know, like, I mean, I don't root against the United States, and people do root against the United States, right? When it comes to the basketball team, there'll be people rooting against the women's basketball team because Caitlin Clark isn't on it. And they root, and because Caitlin Clark isn't on it and Brittany Griner is on it, they'll be rooting against them. They root against the women's soccer team. You know, it happens. But I'm not a jingoism guy. I you know, I'm not rah-rah. I find NBC's Olympics coverage to be over the top at times with that. But that is to be expected. This is not the NBA. This is not 30 teams where you're supposed to be even-handed. It's a United States home team broadcast. And while doing it the way ESPN did it is also valuable, I don't necessarily think it's crazy for an American network broadcasting games involving America to be focused on that team. It's a home team broadcast. ESPN did it differently. ESPN, I mean, maybe. Did ESPN do it differently? I'm not a big soccer viewer, so maybe.
Well, yeah, if you go back and watch some of their 2014 coverage, I think in games not involving the United States, there is much less U.S.-centric talk in between games in the studio. But of course, like when the U.S. came on, it was all about the national team, right? I think what rubs people the wrong way with Fox's broadcast is that, you know, for instance, it could be Canada playing Venezuela, and they're going to talk about the United States perspective, right? Like, how does Canada advance further than the U.S. in this tournament? Why is American coach Jesse Marsh, who's coaching the Canada side, would he have been a better coach than Greg Berhalter? Like, that's the type of stuff the studio might talk about, as opposed to how did Canada win this game and, you know, what it means for the Canadian national team. I think that's what rubs people the wrong way, is when the U.S. is not involved and they are still talking about the U.S. But then again, it is a home team broadcast. Many of the people watching care most about the U.S. national team. So I think it is a valid editorial decision to go there.
Well, I mean, it's the same logic that ESPN uses to talk about the Lakers, and the Lakers are out of the playoffs. But it's obviously different because they're not supposed to be doing Laker favoritism, right? I think it is acceptable to have a U.S. focus on a U.S. focused broadcast. I mean, there's no way that in Canada they're not focusing more on the Canadian team. It's just no way. So, you know, to me, I can talk authoritatively about the decision making when it comes to the schedule. The schedule has been done very effectively. It's worked out very well. The ratings show that they made a lot of the correct moves. And these are moves that ESPN didn't make. I believe there was at least one Copa America where ESPN put all of its matches on ESPN Plus.
Yes.
And so to me, right, just from putting it on regular TV, Fox is an improvement. So
let me just say one more thing to close this out.
Sure.
I didn't write this article because I am in love with Fox's broadcasts of these tournaments. I wrote this article because I think there is an outsized criticism of Fox's decision making here. And I think there was a lane here that was worth defending, right? I think if I were to go back and write this article again, I probably would have focused more on the scheduling aspect, which I kind of mentioned but glossed over a little bit as kind of a given. But there's really just no defense of the Fox soccer broadcasts out there. I felt like a lot of the criticisms had been played out year after year. It's the same thing. And the viewership tells a much different story. So I thought it was a story worth writing and worth telling. That being said, I do think other networks do it better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will say that when I commissioned the article from you, I expected it to be negative. So I was a bit surprised when it came out and it wasn't. But you're right. Sometimes we also do something in this business where we know what is socially acceptable to say. So it is socially acceptable to say, man, Fox really stinks at this and Alexi Lalas is a bad dude and all that. Like that, there won't be pushback. So sometimes people kind of just go with what won't get you pushback. So I give you credit for writing something that would get a little bit more, you know, pushback. Again, I'm kind of on the neutral space there. I will say one other thing. Ratings aren't everything. And ratings do not indicate quality. You can do a terrible job with your coverage and still get good ratings if people want to watch the event. So, it is, you know, the argument that the ratings do not validate the Fox coverage, okay, that makes sense. But the ratings, I think, are because of Fox's specific decision-making to put these telecasts on broadcast television.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, John, let's wrap up with a couple quick hitters here. The evergreen topic of Caitlin Clark's ratings supremacy in the WNBA. You wrote an article yesterday, as we actually record Wednesday morning today, that the Fever have played in 11 of 12 games that have eclipsed the 1 million viewer mark in the WNBA thus far this season. This past Saturday, Liberty Fever averaged 1.87 million on CBS. So another great audience for the W. Is there anything new to say here, John?
No, not really. One, I did get the did have the error in there. I said it was the 11th game with a million. I'm losing track of all the games that are getting a million viewers, and I'm not even really 100% kidding. I forgot about the Fever Aces game last Tuesday. Basically, every time Caitlin Clark is playing, the games are getting over a million viewers, unless they're on NBA TV. He's gotten a million viewers to watch Ion twice. That's unbelievable. So Caitlin is, what he's managed to do in the WNBA is beyond belief, fact or fiction, with Jonathan Frakes, not with James Brolin. It's really been amazing. And I think even my highest expectations would not have had into July, the deadest period of the sporting calendar. I would never have thought we would still be talking about Caitlin Clark getting these kinds of numbers. The one thing that is a bit of a risk is the Olympic break. But, you know, I have to imagine that that's not going to kill the momentum. What will be very interesting is to see how the ratings fare once the National Football League season starts. So that is the next real test. But, you know, as I said before, ratings aren't everything. We talk about ratings. No one gets paid off of the ratings. You get paid off of the sale of advertisements. And so one of the things that I included in this article that I plan to include more and more of, if I'm able, is the ad revenue. So as far as the ad revenue goes, the WNBA, according to the company EDO, generated $12.4 million in ad revenue through the end of June, up 36% from last year, and nearly double, up 88% from 2022. I was a bit surprised. That's a little low, considering that the impressions are up 57%. And considering that the entire women's college basketball season had a modestly higher level of impressions, while more than double the ad revenue, tells me that they're not maximizing the ad revenue the way that maybe they should be. They might have gotten caught off guard by just how good these numbers are. So that is way more important than the ratings. I mean, the ratings are still important as a gauge of popularity. But frankly, you know, I mean, there's a lot of indicators of popularity. To me, the ad revenue, that's the tangible for the networks.
Yeah. You know, I'm not an advertising market expert here, but I'd have to wager a guess that they needed a proof of concept before they were going to pay much larger rates for the WNBA, even with Caitlin Clark. This season has assuredly served as that proof of concept. So I bet as the WNBA goes into the next season in 2025, the ad rates will be more commensurate with the impressions that they are getting. Of course, that's still a risk because who knows if the Caitlin Clark meteor will still be on the rise in 2025, but you know it's hard to deny her drawing power as a viewership play. So I wouldn't expect the discrepancy in impressions and ad rates to stay like this for much longer. I'm sure the WNBA will see increases next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's so difficult to figure out when does a craze end, right? We're 10 years into the summer of Trump, right? You know, when does a craze end? And with Caitlin Clark, you know, it's year one. These things build. LeBron wasn't like at his zenith of popularity in year one. It took a few years. So we might be at the ground floor of where Caitlin's popularity goes. But we also don't know what's going to happen. We also don't know an ankle tweak here, you know, an Achilles there. I mean, I'm not trying to bring that on, but those things happen. We also, you know, to me, the first concern was that her game wouldn't translate to the pros. And I think we all know that that is no longer a concern. If she's healthy, then, hey, sky's the limit. But that's that to me is the big threat, is what is the injury history going to look like? I think Angel Reese has definitely come on. I'm not going to, like I've said before, I'm not in the gaslight game. Okay. We all know Angel Reese is not nearly as popular as Caitlin Clark, but she is more popular than most WNBA players. I'd say she's more popular than Asia Wilson, which is saying something, considering that Asia Wilson's the best player in the game. So Angel Reese, you know, starting to play really well, and her game is starting to do the talking, which has not always been the case. So, you know, obviously, if anything happens to Caitlin, that's a massive blow. But no matter what, I do think the WNBA, because of this draft class, is way better off. I mean, think about Cameron Brink. Wouldn't it have been nice to have Cameron Brink still playing too? But ACL, I didn't even know why I mentioned Achilles. ACL is the killer in women's basketball, and it's gotten a lot of players over the years. So, you can't be 100% sure about how long this is going to last, because health is a big factor, which is one of the reasons why it's a good thing she's not on the Olympic team. It's a benefit. Guess they're a month off, right? A month where she's not, you know, I mean, yeah, you could say, well, hey, Anthony Davis and Christian Laettner and all these men, they've played college, pro, and Olympics in the same year, but not in such a compressed time period. So to me, I think, I think it'll be good for her to get some rest. And as long as her health is fine, I think the WNBA is in great shape long term.
Not only a month off, a month where the other women of the WNBA will be highlighted during these Olympic broadcasts, right? These broadcasts traditionally have gotten, you know, 7, 8, 9 million viewers. That's much, much more than even the biggest WNBA regular season audiences in the Caitlin Clark era. So a big opportunity for NBC to highlight some of these other women in the WNBA.
Yeah, but, you know, they've done that before and it never had an impact. You know, I mean, Diana Taurasi's won how many gold medals, you know? So I think, look, hey, those Olympic games are going to do better than any Caitlin Clark game. And people are going to act shocked because they don't know that women's basketball does well in the Olympics. But I don't necessarily think the WNBA has ever shown that the Olympics rose the sport beyond, obviously, 96. 96 created the league. But beyond that point, I don't think there's ever been a time when the popularity of the women's team during the Olympics has really translated into anything meaningful for the WNBA.
And that's true. But I do think there's a bit of a different eye on women's basketball right now. So, you know, maybe with the media coverage the league's been getting, people will look at the women's Olympic team a bit differently this year. I want to touch on one more topic, John, before we close out. And that is the Dallas Stars choosing to launch a fast channel for their local media rights package of games, rather than, you know, selling to a local over-the-air broadcaster. Obviously, they will no longer be on Bally Sports Southwest, which was their RSN. All their local games will be free to air on streaming. This is the first in North American professional sports, major professional sports, I should probably specify. John, what did you think of this move? And do you think we'll see other teams go the way of the fast channel?
The fast channel is the future. It is, right? Because ad-supported cable was popular. So ad-supported cable with, I mean, this is no strings. This is no subscription. This is no account. This is, I don't have to give you my email. This is, I don't have to.
I'll stop you there because this is an account. They did specify that you will have to sign in with either your Google or Facebook account to access these games. So,
well, then what's the point?
There's that.
You know, I mean, and okay, it's still free, but that's, yeah. No, fast channels in general You don't have to sign up for anything. You just have it. And that's the smart way of going about it, because it's basically ad-supported cable without the boxing contract. And the content may not be as good, but the content isn't good anywhere. So to me, it's like, oh, wow, 24 hours of Three's Company. Yeah, well, MTV is 24 hours of ridiculousness. And frankly, I'll take Jack, Janet, and Chrissy, and even Terry over that. So to me, look, this is where people are watching a lot of things. I mean, Pluto TV, Tubi, it's free, and the ads are obviously obnoxious. I personally am not a big fan of a lot of commercials, but a lot of people also don't care. I mean, you don't have to pay anything.
I think it's notable on Nielsen's last gauge measure, the gauge, which people in the industry love to point to. Tubi was actually tied with Disney Plus at 1.8% of all television viewing. That might be an underrated story, you know, going forward, is, you know, how many people actually watch these fast channels, these fast services like Tubi and Pluto, because it is not insignificant.
Yeah, no, you make an excellent point. I mean, it is undersold. It is underrated. There's no original programming. There's no boutique programming, right?
Tubi does have original programming, actually.
It does? My God.
Yes. I would venture to say it's probably not what is driving people to Tubi.
Okay, so they do have original programs. I got to correct myself on that. But when all, Tubi is really just for movies, and, you know, you're willing to watch an ad, you can see the movie. I mean, people don't want to pay tons of money to see these things. People don't have tons of money to spend. It's free. And when it comes down to this, I don't know how many other teams are going to follow the stars onto fast channels. I don't know how many other teams are going to do that. But it's an option. And I mean, and given some of the methods of distribution, you know, putting games on antenna TV, maybe a streaming service is a fast streaming service is better. And look, let's be real. The broadcast television thing is great, but a lot of these affiliates are these digital sub-channels that are not, they don't even come in well on an antenna. You know, ION for the WNBA has been very successful. It's worked out so far. But ION, if you get it through your antenna, I mean, it doesn't look good. Frankly, most of the time I try to stream ION as a fast channel through Amazon. Right.
No, I've been the same way, John. I also have an antenna set up in my household, and I've noticed, you know, when I've gone and watched, you know, ACC basketball on the CW or LIV Golf on the CW, and now with the WNBA on ION, these channels do not come in at very high quality over the antenna. They look much crisper when you stream them on a fast service. So I'm with you. And even then, honestly, they don't look great. That's something I would like to see improved from these netlets, but you got to take what you can get. It's free, right?
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. And, you know, I do think that's an option. I think that is a very underutilized space right now, The fast channel.
All right, John. Good podcast today. Glad to be back here with you this week after the week off. Who knows what is to come the rest of the summer, but I'm sure we will record as necessary. I'll let you close out the podcast.
Yeah, another week down, more to go. The Olympics is coming up week after next. So all the extreme boredom of this time will pass for 2 weeks, and then we'll go right back to it in August. So we will be back here to chronicle all of the comings and goings in the industry as they warrant. Not sure if we'll have a show next week, but, you know, check back. We might. But thanks for listening in the meantime.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country, and jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.